Good morning, everyone. Meeting will come to order. The clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. We have the minutes of the last meeting before us. Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes for May 11th. Any corrections, additions, changes to the minutes? See none. All in favor of approval of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Most prevails, the minutes are approved. Members and members of the public, we have quite a few items on the agenda today. This may be our last meeting of the year. It may not. Let's start out with House File 621. That's Representative Corkelson.
Morning,
Representative Torkelson moves that House File 621 be referred to the General Register, and there is a DE1 amendment. Representative Torkelson moves the H0621 DE1 amendment. Can we vote on the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author desires? Any discussion of the DE1 amendment? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I assume when this amendment goes on that you're going to pass the bill out then with blank appropriations?
Representative Carlson, I guess I would say that is somewhat unusual, but that would be the plan. And yeah. I think we all know what this bill is about.
I know what it's about, Mr. Chairman, but when I was in the chair, we did pass out a vehicle. Actually, it dealt with bonding, but we did put at least placeholder numbers in. I mean, it's rather unique that we would be, when you've got in the House budget resolution enough money for a $600 million bonding bill, I would assume you could have put at least some placeholder numbers in to cover some of the costs.
You know, I think you're right.
I'm really concerned about the role of ways and means here, passing out bills with blank appropriations. I mean, that flies in the face of the very purpose of this particular committee.
Yeah, I think you make a good point on that, Representative Carlson. I think we should probably do something on that. And I guess I can ask the author on that in a minute. How about if we add the DE1 amendment, and then we can talk about that and make an amendment to that.
That would be fine. The reason I raised the question now was that it had blank appropriations in it. But
No, that's a good question. All right, any other questions? All in favor of the DE1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails, the DE1 amendment is adopted. Representative Torkelson, can you talk to us about House File 621 as amended?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. As is pretty obvious, I think, to everyone, House File 621 is being moved to the floor as a vehicle bill, and the blank appropriations are in the bill as a recommendation of nonpartisan staff.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, so we are now looking at the bonding bill, right? And it has not been in capital investment, has not seen your proposal, and now this committee will not see your proposal. What that really means is the public does not get an opportunity to comment.
Representative Wagenius, could you pull the mic closer, please?
So the public does not get an opportunity to comment. Help us understand why that's a good idea.
Representative Torkelson. Oh,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Wagenius. As you know, the path for bonding bills is one that has taken many routes over the years, including a route very similar, if not identical, to what the path we're on today. It happens. It's the nature of bonding. Sometimes it does not take a very public path to passage.
Representative Wagenius.
But shouldn't we want a public path? Shouldn't we want the public to know what we're up to? I mean, it's bad enough that the public can't come and visit us at the Capitol. But now you are telling us that the public, we're taking a path without public involvement. And I'm not understanding why that's a good idea.
Well, Representative Wagenius, I should say You know, we have another Torkelson bill that is still in the possession of the committee, and so by passing this, that's not necessarily saying that we're going to take one particular path. So just so people are aware that there's another bill in the possession of the committee that could be used for a bonding bill, too. Representative Wagenius.
Well, the point is not what path we're taking. The point is, how is the public going to be involved? And it does seem that now we've skated around the Capital Investment Committee, so the public can't talk to the Capital Investment Committee about the proposal. But now it looks like the only opportunity left for the public would be this committee. Are you going to so the question is, does the public have an opportunity to weigh in on the bonding bill? That's my question. And if not, help the public understand why they don't have an opportunity to weigh in.
Well, Representative Wagenius, I think there's probably still a bonding vehicle in the bonding committee, too, probably more than one, but Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Wagenius. As a member of the Capital Investment Committee, I'm sure you know that we spent a great deal of time traveling the state of Minnesota, a great deal of time in committee taking testimony. If you'd care to review my schedule over the last 18 months, you would note that I have spent a great deal of time taking input from many members of the public, many project proposers. We tried to accommodate anyone who had an interest in the bonding bill to present their views to me and through me to the committee. This has not been we've not been operating in the dark. We've been operating in a very public fashion. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Wagenius.
One more question, Representative Wagenius, and then I have Representative Kahn, Mahoney, and Carlson. Representative Wagenius.
Representative Torkelson, I went on some of those tours with you. However, that's just one piece of the puzzle. The bigger piece of the puzzle for the public is, how has all of this integrated? How is it going to come together in a bill? What's in, what's out? Public has no way of weighing in if we just bypass the Capital Investment Committee, bypass this committee, go straight to the floor. The public is now cut out. And that is what I am not understanding, why we would want to do that.
Representative Kahn.
I would like to just follow up on a statement that Representative Torkelson made. You said this process has been done before. Could you tell exactly when it was done, what dates, who was in charge, and what's and so forth?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn, I do not have those dates in front of me. I have reviewed those. I have them in my office. There have been many times in the last decade that a bonding bill has not gone through the actual process of a regular public committee of where it's passed both floors and been in conference committee. It's not at all unusual. Thank you.
I just wanted an example to help me remember them.
Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It looks like we're going back to an old... Yes, this is the way it's been done a couple times before. Three old white guys in a room back in some corner of the building here or some building around the complex, and they're all going to figure that out. I'm just wondering, would you care to share? Because, you see, I have most of my constituents have my cell number, and they have been calling on the importance. And I'm trying to be as kind as I can because you are the bonding chair, and I have three particular pieces in your bill, I hope. there's always a hope. They have my cell number, and they've been spending the last 6 or 10 weeks, how many weeks have we been in session, calling me about the importance of the Eastside Freedom Library, the Humanities Center, and I think there's one other. Obviously, they haven't picked on that other one just that much. But I thought they should, you know, be able to call Speaker Doubt and relay the same messages they've been relaying to me, because although I know you've been working hard, you've spent $30,000. You've taken people on bus rides around the state. You've answered questions. You've done all that other stuff. But at the end of the day, not a whole lot of transparency in this particular process. And that's one of the problems that we faced last year and we're going to face again this year, it looks like. So whether this is the vehicle or something else is the vehicle, I'm just wondering if you wanted to share Speaker Dowd's cell phone, because I've got the governors and the majority leader. I haven't gotten Speaker Dowd's yet for some reason or another.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Well, I will take your comment about old white guys as a badge of honor. I'm not sure that Representative Hausman would feel the same way, but, you know, it's the process. It's difficult. As you know, as everyone knows, there are over $5 billion of bonding proposals, and no one in anywhere has ever thought that we could put all of them into a bill. So it's difficult work. It's hard work. I'm working hard, and I hope at the end of the day that with cooperation of your party, we will put together a respectable bill that we can all be proud of that does well for the state of Minnesota.
Representative Mahoney.
And I don't deny that you've been working hard. I don't think anyone up here takes it lightly what we do, whether we're on the right or the left or in the middle and getting run down. I know we all work hard. What the process is, and you know, I sat on the bonding committee for, I've been here 18 years, or probably 10 if not 12 years on the bonding committee. And we've always tried to have the bonding bill, when I was on it, I had to sit through committee hearings, whether it's this room or the other, and take a vote on all the projects that were in the bill at the final deal and send it to the House floor. It does not look like that, and send it to the House floor with enough time for all the people that there's a lot of paid people in this room, but a lot of the regular citizens to have a comment. I mean, it's kind of like a couple other emails I'm getting lately. And it doesn't seem to be the process going forward right now, because we only have 6 or 7 days left to session. I don't know how you could hold a hearing where your $600 million bill is voted on by your members and ours, or the $1.5 billion Senate bill is voted on. So I don't understand that. I don't see how it could happen. We've been around here a long time. And I don't deny that this is a tough process. But the process should be where the principal that lives down the street from me can stop up here and have his voice heard, or the mom who's trying to figure out how she's going to do child care at the decrepit child care center that might have had a bonding request in to fix up their bonding bill, or the students that populate the Freedom Library and get tutoring from college professors so that they actually graduate, can come up here and comment on a final bill. That's what's the problem here, Representative Torkelson and members. And you know, I don't understand. I don't see how we get to that process and have good governance with that.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was going to raise some of the questions that Representative Mahoney did, but I still have a couple that remain, like a couple of people that have talked, not currently on the Capital Investment Committee, but did serve on it for many years, going back to 1980. And I think we're seeing a rather unique approach before us here today. But my question, Mr. Chairman, is of Representative Torkelson, because of the short time that remains. We're literally in the last week, and last week I brought up the timing question of a bonding bill and asked when the majority would be releasing their $600 million bonding bill, but also just the mere timing of committee hearings, bill referrals, and what have you. So, Representative Torkelson, my question of you is, when is your next meeting scheduled of the Capital Investment Committee?
Representative Torkelson.
We have no meeting scheduled at this time. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, that reinforces my point because it was pointed out that while there are other bills in the committee, that could be taken up, and this is just a potential vehicle, the way it sounded. I think we're talking about the real vehicle here. If there's not a committee hearing scheduled, and with the shortness of time and the House re-referral requirements, unless you were to have a meeting very promptly and unveil your $600 million bill or whatever you plan on unveiling at that point in time, you'd have to really expedite things pretty rapidly. So I think a lot of us have the concern then that this is going to be lacking transparency.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and a question and a comment. Representative Torkelson, do you have any idea how many bonding projects there were requested of us?
Representative
Torkelson. How many requests did we get?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. I honestly do not have a total of the number. It's many hundreds.
Okay. Representative Roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, I know you know the amount, and I didn't really expect you to know the number, but hundreds is probably a good estimate. And, you know, I as a member of the Capital Investment Committee, I felt this was a very open process, you know, very inclusive to the public. I've served, as my 14, I think I've been on 12 years on Capital Investment Committees, and this process is very similar, I think, to the way it's been done in the past. We went on tours, as you've heard. We had numerous committee meetings where we heard projects. I had numerous sessions when people came into my office to talk about bonding projects. I received phone calls, letters, emails. I have a file a foot and a half high on bonding projects. We've been able to have a lot of access to this, and certainly I hope that the minority isn't suggesting that, you know, we could take hundreds of projects and vote them each up and down in our committee process. That would be a very cumbersome way to do it as well. So I don't know that there is a perfect way to do a bonding bill, but I think Representative Torkelson has been doing a fine job in you know, trying to accommodate the needs of the public and put this together, and I'm sure we will put together a bill that will be successful.
Hey, members, we do have quite a few bills ahead of us, and I think I'd like to get on to those as well. But Representative Torkelson, do you have a preference on what we put into the three blanks on here in terms of a number on lines 4, 7, and 12? We could put in 0. We could put in some other number. I think I agree with Representative Carlson that there should be some number inserted in them.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do not have any numbers in mind, and I would take your direction as to what would be appropriate.
Okay. Well, I think just in terms of flexibility, we all know that there's going to be, if this, in fact, is the vehicle, an amendment that would change everything radically. And so I guess I would suggest the number being $0 after talking to Mr. Marks, that is a number that would work. And so Representative Torkelson, if you're comfortable moving that the number 0 be substituted into the blanks in lines 4, 7, and 12, if you're okay, Representative Torkelson makes that motion. Any discussion to that motion? Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think the Capitol watchers would understand what you're attempting to do. But do you really want to put 0 in when the average citizen looks online and is following the bill that's interested in a project, for example, here at the, any one of these, the Minsky or U of M or whatever, for their heaper, and you've got 0 in there? You're sending a rather interesting message to that average citizen that doesn't understand the intricacies of what's going on here, where some number would at least imply that you have some intention.
Well, I think, Representative Carlson, the flip side is that I think everyone knows we're going to be spending some money in these areas, and if we pick a higher number, then we are somewhat perhaps more putting down a marker of what the number actually should be. Whereas if we put in 0, I think everyone knows we're going to be spending more than that. because there'd be no point in passing a bill if the number for all these were zero.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can see somebody out there that's just the average citizen, a student at one of our campuses or something, sees zero. What's their reaction going to be? When you say everybody knows, I don't buy into the fact that everybody knows, but I'm just asking the question, do you really want to use zero? Well, when you have any number you could use that's there for a $600 million bonding bill that would have some reasonableness to it if the average citizen were to look at it, but you're in the majority.
Well, that is the amendment that's before us. An amendment to the amendment would be in order if someone wishes to offer one. Representative Wagenius.
Well, perhaps Representative Torkelson can remind us what both you and our college system asked for in maintenance, HEPR.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tens of millions of dollars. I don't have the exact figures in front of me this morning, Representative Wagenius. I believe the university was somewhere around $100 million, and as was Minsky.
I think the university was around $100 million, too. Altogether, just deferred maintenance was $407 million asked for by the agencies in the university system. So at $600 million, unless everything goes to deferred maintenance and maybe a little water infrastructure, that's what the bonding bill is going to be, deferred maintenance and water infrastructure. And that's fine, but we should be telling the public that.
See, no further discussion. All in favor of the oral amendment to insert the number zero in the blanks on lines 4, 7, and 12, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
The motion prevails. The oral amendment is adopted. Other discussion to the bill as amended? Seeing no discussion, Representative Torkelson renews his motion that House File 621 as amended be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. House File 621 as amended is referred to the General Register. Okay, members, I think I'm going to, just in the interest of trying to be efficient with our schedule, take House File 2991 first. Is Representative O'Driscoll here? Representative O'Driscoll is not here. He's in committee. Representative O'Driscoll asked me as a co-author of the bill to present this bill, which I believe is a relatively non-controversial bill. And so the chair will move that House File 2991 be referred to the General Register. And members, this bill basically does two things. The fiscal aspect of it is that right now, if the Department of Commerce receives a complaint about an appraiser or a realtor or someone they're licensing, and they go out and they investigate the person, and they come back and they find out that there is nothing wrong in their opinion, they still hand the person being investigated a bill. And they say, well, we investigated you, there's nothing wrong. Here's a bill for our investigation. And so this gets rid of that requirement that the Department of Commerce hands the person being investigated a bill if they were in fact found to have no wrongdoing. I think the fiscal cost of that in terms of revenue foregone is $11,000, which is the fiscal aspect of the bill. The second item is increasingly in the appraisal business, there are appraisal management companies that have come to the fore, which is different from sort of the independent appraiser that used to be commonplace. Well, and it's still commonplace out there, but used to be pretty much the only way things are done. And this sets up some definitions of appraisal management companies and how they're defined, how they're regulated, and also sets up some standard for reasonable and customary fees charged by them. So with that, members, are there any questions to House File 2991? Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, and I've been down the road before where you eliminated the charge back to a company or individual that's being investigated. Just to keep it on your radar screen as you, I don't know what the Senate bill looks like at all. Inspectors and investigators can find something wrong if they look hard enough, so that they have to write up a ticket so they can be charged to them. So be careful what you wish for with the zeroing out the $11,000.
Okay, thank you, Representative Mahoney. And just to be clear, if they actually do find something, then they still can be charged. It's just if they don't find anything that they aren't charged. But I know what you're saying, Representative Mahoney. Then that's a good point.
Mr.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I actually talked to some people over there, and I think they have found one violation they've written up over the last several years. And although it wasn't said, it's certainly that's, you know, we're all perceptive here. That message was, oh, well, we could probably find a few every year from now on. So that'll go on that assessor, appraiser's record and be something that they see. So the appraisers, and it sounds like this is a bill that was written with a lot of help from the appraisers, they might want to rethink that $11,000 that is spread out over an awful lot of people. I don't know what it costs, but what it would be. But you really, they're looking at having a whole lot more on their record rather than what they have now.
All right, other discussion of House File 2991. Oh, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It just seems kind of following on Representative Mahoney's comment that the wiser course would be to take that $11,000 and put it into the fees that are charged for the licenses and thereby spread it out. So, you know, I can understand how it must be a little jarring to be inspected and find no violation and then get a bill. But it seems that's what licensing fees are for, because the entire licensed occupation, in a sense, benefits from not having bad apples out there doing wrong. And so it seems like that would be the more common way this would be done. And instead of saying you can't charge them and now the state's going to absorb that cost, I guess I would, I'd kind of like to know what the Department of Commerce thinks about this, if somebody's here, actually.
Is there a representative of the Department of Commerce here? I see someone coming forward. Hello, sir. Welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Peter Brickwitty, Assistant Commissioner from the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Representative Liebling, the Commerce Department worked with a number of stakeholder groups from the appraiser community and the AMC community on the sections of the sections 2 through the end of the bill. Reflects a strong effort on the part of all parties to find good compromise, and we are supportive of those portions of the bill. I did testify, and Representative O'Driscoll is aware that we do have concerns about Section 1 of the bill. I think Representative Mahoney articulated one potential outcome. But, Mr. Chairman, I think we've sort of taken the position that we would prefer to not see perfect stand in the way of the good on this bill.
Representative Chair,
thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Brickwitty, did you consider did anybody talk about just adding the amount of the fiscal note to the licensing cost, so it's spread over all the licensees instead of delivering a bill to whoever, you know, or instead of having the state absorb the cost?
Mr. Brookwoody.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, Section 1 of the bill was not part of the discussions with the stakeholder groups that the Commerce Department was engaged on, so I wouldn't be able to answer your question definitively. We have not at the Commerce Department.
Okay. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, the chair renews his motion that House File 2991 be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 2991 is referred to the General Register. Next up is House File 1412. Representative Fabian.
Oh, this is Constantine Fabian.
Chair will move that House File 1412 be referred to the General Register And I understand there's a delete all amendment, the DE7 amendment. The chair will move the DE7 amendment. Well, I guess that's right. Representative Hornstein, you're a co-author on this bill. Would you like to move the DE7 amendment?
Sure, I'll do that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Hornstein moves the DE7 amendment. And maybe this is an opportunity to, since it is a delete all amendment, to review the bill for members. Representative Hornstein or Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regards to the review, what I will do is turn that over to Mr. Gadelka from MPCA. This is an agreement that came together late last week, and obviously it has a lot of interest by looking around the room. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Gadelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency Land Policy. The delete all amendment before you, is, as mentioned by the authors, is a compromise between the industry, local units of government, and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Overall, the e-waste program is set up to help finance the collection of electronic waste, TVs, computer monitors, and other assorted items. The law has been in place for about 9 years, but it's showing its age. The improvements to this bill are a number, and I'll highlight some of the larger ones. Currently, right now, when a TV is collected to meet a manufacturer's obligation, many times it is the collector or the consumer bringing it to them that's helping cover the costs. The intent of the legislation when it was passed 9 years ago was that those costs would be borne solely by the manufacturer. There is a provision in this legislation now that says the manufacturer has to cover those complete costs. Counties in that right now, for instance, are paying about 14 cents a pound for this that they'll no longer need to pay. Another change is a change in the size of the obligation. Right now, obligation is based on weight of sale of materials, about 80%. However, what is being pulled back in collected is much heavier, so the actual supply does not meet the demand of the obligation, and that excess amount, which is in the fact sheet you're seeing, that chart, that area between the two bars is what's being covered by local units of government, collectors like Best Buy or private citizens as they turn in. This bill transitions to a new model, which will be the obligation for the manufacturer is based on what's actually collected in previous years, so that we will more closely match the supply and demand and have those costs covered by the manufacturer. There are another provision in there which reduces the fee for very small manufacturers. Those sell less than 100 units within the state. That is a $1,250 fee that will no longer be there because of the size of it, just the amount of work it takes to collect the fee. And it's also more than these businesses are paying for collecting the material, and that's where we want them to focus. And you'll notice in the fiscal note that's one of the aspects in there. There is a reduction in fees to a tune of about $40,000 to the agency, which the agency is willing to absorb at this time. The last change is just strictly policy, the larger one. It requires any recycler that's collecting pounds for a manufacturer's obligation to be certified with a third party, for instance, E-Stewards. This helps ensure that the materials are collected in an environmentally friendly way and handled once they leave the state borders. We have regulations here with the Solid Waste Program to regulate materials that's taken care of here in Minnesota or collected, but once it goes outside the state, this is an opportunity for us to make sure that it's handled in the proper way. With that, Mr. Chair and committee members, I can get into more detail if you like, but those are the highlights.
Discussion to the DE7 amendment. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Commissioner Kadelka, Commissioner Stein, Representative Hornstein, Representative Fabian, and everybody, including many of the folks in the room. The industry really came forward and worked with. This is really important for the counties, specifically all counties, including the ones represented, Hennepin County by Representative Hornstein and Representative Fabian's district in far northwestern Minnesota, counties like Roseau County, where this is a great bill, doing good things, I think. Specifically, Best Buy was instrumental. As many know, Best Buy has taken TVs up until recently at no charge, just drop them off, and have really been doing good things. I appreciate their leadership. And Commissioner Kadelka, you did a good job bringing this together, and Representative Hornstein, thank you so very much for working with Representative Fabian. So this is a great bill, shows that we can do things bipartisanly and get stuff done around here, so thanks a lot.
All right. All in favor of the Hornstein motion to adopt the DE-7 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The DE-7 amendment is adopted. So members, we have the bill as amended before us. Any other discussion on the bill? Seeing none, the chair will renew his motion that House File 1412 as amended be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 1412 as amended is referred to the General Register. Good example of bipartisan cooperation up there.
I assume everybody's going to leave the room now, Mr. Chair.
All right. Next, we'll bring up House File 963, Representative Keel.
Taking a picture of that?
Leon Lilly took a picture of him. Yeah. Everything was set. Needed to be said.
Okay. The chair will move that House File 963 be referred to the General Register. And members, we've got a few different amendments here. There is a delete all amendment. I guess I prefer to not be adopting delete all amendments unless it's absolutely necessary in committee. And so what I think I'm going to do is move the other amendments, which when we're all done will basically have the bill in the form of the DE-6 amendment. So if people want to follow what the bill would look like as it's completely amended, as I understand it, you can just look at the DE-6 amendment.
Well, then why don't we just adopt it?
Representative Kahn?
Well, then why don't we just adopt it and discuss it? Doesn't that make it a little easier to look at it?
Well, actually, let me just...
Mr.
Then,
Chair?
Then we actually have to adjust some of the other amendments. I guess it's not a complete... It's not a complete delete-all amendment that encompasses everything. Mm-hmm. So... Representative Keel, I think I want to do the A1 amendment, which is the appropriation language. I'll move the A1 amendment. Representative Keel, can you speak to that amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you, members. In the third amendment 3, there is a addition to House File 963 that asks for the public utilities to deal with conflict if their agreement can't be on a right-of-way crossing between the utilities, a utility, and the railroads. And so I believe that the amendment, Amendment 1, is to deal with the finance costs of asking public utilities to address a conflict.
Okay, all in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. And members, I think before I go to the other amendments, I think maybe it would make sense to have Representative Keel present the bill so that people are fully informed on what the bill does, and then they'll be able to better speak to any questions on the amendment. So, Representative Keel, could you present your bill, House File 963, and talk a little bit about what it does, then we'll take the A3 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is dealing with an issue between utilities and railroads as it pertains to crossings when they are trying to install maybe a electrical line or conduit fiber optics, it was escaping me for a moment. But the ability to get across so that they can do the services they need, fuel, there's all kinds of issues in this bill. We've had a lot of conversation between both the utilities and the railroads. I would venture to say not everybody's thrilled with this bill, and hopefully there's something for everybody in here. That was at least my intention to do. So we've done some additions, like requiring that the Public Utilities Commission be involved in a conflict between the two so that they can work out the disagreements. The other issue that is really why I got involved in this to begin with was that the utilities were struggling with getting a stable cost to be able to go underneath those lines or the rail tracks in most cases, but over and above also. In the Amendment 3, you'll notice that we added an interference induction study, and that is to deal with high-power electricity and to make sure that that there is no conflicts when railroads are trying to change tracks or communications. Those types of things need to happen. We did do a standard fee for getting across the rail lines at $1,250, which is not in the that is in the Amendment 3, and then did some insurance adjustments that were not in the original House File 963 for the railroads. That is a special insurance that has to be provided for risk that could happen. Also, I believe in the right-of-way, just trying to make sure I got all the points. And then there was some in existing agreements that we added. Oh, and also added the to follow the AREMA standards dictated by the federal government and the electrical standards also dictated by the federal government, so that we fall in statute there, in line there. So I believe I got everything, Mr. Chair.
All right, members, now I'll move the A3 amendment. And Representative Keel, I guess, can you add some additional discussion to the A3 amendment?
In the A3 amendment, we did put in an annual fee of $100 per crossing per year. And there is a little bit of discussion on the statute 237.04 that discusses the diminution in value. That would also go to the $1,250 rather than a market value rate, and that is a little bit of a controversy, I guess I'm explaining there. And Mr. Chair, I think I probably kind of muddied the waters and did that originally, so I think that's about what's in the DE6.
All right. All in favor of the A3 amendment, signify by... Oh, Representative Mahoney. Sorry, I missed you.
That's okay. I was a little late getting my arm up. Representative Keel, on page 1, line 23, you're deleting page on the bill, page 2, line 28, you're deleting $750 and inserting that equals or exceeds the standard crossing fee under subdivision 6. And I'm not sure what the standard crossing fee is. Are we looking at just the $750 that you've got in subdivision 5, or I don't see a reasonable sum in subdivision 6. Maybe I haven't gotten there yet, but
excuse me. Are you asking about House File 963 or the amendment?
I'm looking at House File 963, but I'm working off of the A3 amendment. And I think that's the one we were on line, page 1, line 23. Mm-hmm. It states page 2, line 28, delete 750, and insert that equals or exceeds the standard crossing fee under subdivision 6. I went to subdivision 6, and I don't really see I'm asking you to point out what the standard crossing fee is, because all I see is $1 million, $2 million, $4 million, $10 million.
Representative
Teal. Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, it references it there in the standard fee, and later in subdivision 5, oh, I've got to look at the subdivision 5, it identifies the fee, I believe.
On page 3, line 15, the fee is $750 for each crossing.
Wait. Try line in the amendment 3, look at 2.34, H2.34. It inserts the $12.50.
Okay.
So the actual dollar amount is in
the amendment?
It's in the amendment, yes.
And you're changing it from $7.50 to $12.50.
Mr. That's
Chair.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm going to, before I recognize people here, I guess staff tells me that it would be easier for us to make an adjustment to the A3 amendment now in place of one of the other amendments that is coming later. And so I guess I will recognize Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, the A4 amendment that is in members' packets would delete a $100 compensation fee that's paid by a short line railroad, actually by a utility to a short line railroad. So if members want to amend the A3 amendment, they can avoid the A4 by eliminating that compensation fee from the A3 before adopting it. So the change to the A3 would be page 1. Delete lines 15 to 18. That's just a definition that's used in the compensation fee language. So without the compensation fee, the definition of short line railroad is not necessary. And the compensation fee that would be deleted starts on the bottom of page 2. Delete line 36. That's the instruction of where to put the language. And then on the top of page 3, the compensation fee language would be deleted on lines 1 through 5. And I think there might be some small technical changes just to renumber or actually re-letter the paragraphs now that paragraph C wouldn't be inserted. But the bulk of the amendment is the language that I just pointed out, Chair.
Okay, so... Members, in order to, it may not seem like this is going to make things easier, but it actually does. In order to make it easier, I'm going to move to amend the A3 amendment by on page 1, deleting lines 15 through 18, on page 2, deleting line 36, and on page 3, deleting lines 1 through 5. And members, my understanding of this amendment is that basically in the A3 amendment, there is a $100 a year additional fee, and that after further discussion, I think the decision was made that there should not be a $100 a year additional fee. I don't know if that was because there was just too much hassle or what, but anyway, that would be the effect of the amendment, is you'd no longer have an additional ongoing $100 a year fee. And I don't know if Representative Keel, you want to make any other comments on that?
No, that would be fine.
Okay, so is there any discussion to the Chair's oral amendment that I just made? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of that oral amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The oral amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Keel. Then this short line railroads won't have to pay anything?
Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, no, it would be that the utilities would not pay an annual fee to the short line railroad. They would still pay the the application fee.
And Mr. Chair, all railroads then, or all utilities will have to pay $1,250 instead of $750?
Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, yes, that is correct. It would be $1,250 for every crossing that the utility would make. That would be their application fee for applying to go underneath a rail line.
Is it?
But Representative Keel, I think that, but right now many are paying more than $1,250. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is in fact correct, and that is the reason for the bill. Members, you need to know that this is the conversation was that it has been sporadic, maybe not sporadic is not a good word. It is unpredictable as to what the utilities pay, and so this is to bring this into a more stable a way for the utilities to deal with the railroads when they are looking to access the other side of the railroad.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Keel, is the $1,250 a one-time forever then?
Representative Keel.
That would be correct.
But at every crossing?
Yes.
Representative Keel.
And at the present time, Mr. Chair, at the present time, are there varying amounts that they have to pay?
Representative,
because
Keel.
I was thinking that the people that visited me from the co-ops were talking about $500 at every crossing, but it changed often. And so, did we jump from the 500 up to the 1250 for just one time then? And 1250 is forever?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, what has happened in the previous is that typically the Class 1 railroads charge an annual fee, and that can be quite high, in the thousands of dollars. Then there is the short line railroads who have an annual application, but then there's the annual fee, and the annual fee has climbed, from my understanding, between the conversation that I've had with the two parties, is it was somewhere around $75, $100 annual fee, and for one short line it's gone up to $2,600 annually for every crossing recently. So that is problematic. So
Representative Murphy.
So Mr. Chair, Representative Keel, then I understand then that at every crossing the utility will pay $1,250 now, and then they don't have to pay it anymore, and they can cross today, and they can cross next year, and they can cross some other time. Am I correct?
I don't believe so, Mr. Chair.
Representative
Keel. And Representative Murphy, if they were to go back in and have to do something or adjust the line, I would believe there would be a contact with, you know, they would have to apply again to the railroad to adjust something. So in my rural area, my electrical company has to replace line sometimes. Unfortunately, the gophers were eating my line, so I'd lose power. And they didn't have to change. I didn't have a railroad track by my place, but they would have had to have applied again to the railroad to say we would like now to change the line, and so they would go in and they would have to make another application. The important part about this is that everybody knows that there is a line going underneath the rail. It is important for the railroads to keep the stability, and it is important for the utilities to be able to repair and access. Especially in rural Minnesota, it becomes a problem, or in small communities. But it is The other thing I would point out is that Gopher One is also available to recognize what is, you know, whether it's electrical, gas, telecoms, or whatever, that there's that ability to go underneath or to review it.
Representative Murphy.
So, Mr. Chair, do I... Representative Keel, do I understand then that the $1,250 has to be paid each time the utility has to go to the crossway?
Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, my understanding is if they are digging, if they would be boring, or they actually bore through, and maybe since Mr. Ahern is with me, maybe we'd like to ask him. Is that okay?
Can you clarify for me, Mr. Chair, Mr. Ahern, can you clarify for me how often this 1250 amount has to be paid?
Sure. Mr. Ahern, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mike Ahern, and I represent the Minnesota Telecom Alliance. Representative Keel is correct in that the one-time crossing fee of $1,250 is paid every time a new facility is put in. If all you're doing is replacing, for example, copper wire and putting fiber into an existing conduit, you would not pay it. However, if you have to drill another facility, and you'd pay another $1,250.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Keel, just quickly, concerns are being expressed to me that the short line rails are being treated adversely compared to the other railroads. Could you clarify that for me, please?
And Representative Erdahl, actually, I'm going to have some testimony from one of the short lines in a minute here, too. But Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, we spent quite a bit of time in this last 10 weeks discussing that and trying to figure out a balance. I would no doubt agree that the short lines feel that this is a challenging issue for them. But I think we need to come to some kind of a balance about what we're paying, what the utilities / railroads are dealing with. And, I will let them explain where they're at, too.
Okay. Members, we have the A3 amendment as amended before us. Seeing no further discussion on it, all in favor of the A3 amendment as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A3 amendment as amended is adopted. Okay, so members, now we have the bill completely in shape. I'm not aware of any other amendments. Representative Keel, do you have any other comments on the bill? Otherwise, I know that Commissioner Mike Beard wants to come forward. Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair, at this time, I think that would be a good idea.
Okay. Commissioner Beard, please come forward. Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the commissioner comes forward, I would like him to ask or answer a question. I was the original author of this bill. And when I first had learned, my understanding was the railroads were initially dealing with the utilities. And then the railroads hired an independent contractor to work with the contracts. And after that took place, all the fees started getting jacked up on all the local utilities. And so I wanted to initially rein this in a little bit. To me, it appeared to be a money grab from the contractors, and I'd like to be corrected if I'm wrong on that. And so I thank Representative Keel for bringing this forward to give us some certainty for the utilities. And it was my understanding when the utilities would come in, they'd pay a one-time fee. And then it was added that there would be annual fees on top of that, and that kept increasing. And so there was no certainty for the utilities that were doing these crossings. In the event they had ever come back and bore a new hole for a new line, then they'd be subject to the fee once again. But I don't fully understand. I'm glad the commissioner's here, because I don't fully understand the negative impact to the short line railroad. So if Commissioner Beard could address that. Thank you.
Commissioner Beard, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chairman,
welcome back to the Committee on Ways and Means in your case.
In a little different setting than I used to be, but Mr. Chairman, thank you. It's good to be here. I'm Mike Beard, and I'm representing the Minnesota Valley Rail Coalition, to be precise. Those are the people that signed my check since when I announced that I was no longer going to be in the legislature. Many of you remember one of the expertises that I had was railroad. Railroad activity, railroad operations, railroad, just railroads. And so the Rail Coalition, which consists of the towns, counties, and shippers along 94 miles of track running west from Norwood, Young America to Hanley Falls through the city of Redwood Falls and other points, called and asked if I would help them as they rebuilt basically a 120-year-old railroad that they had purchased in order to save the economies of their communities. And so I'm glad for the setup question, Representative Hamilton, because if you will indulge me for a few moments, I have some comments about the bill, Mr. Chairman, which I've expressed to many of you, but would like to do so publicly, but perhaps just a brief history lesson on how we got to where we are and how we came to have these. Some people see them as interlopers. Some of us see them as experts that understand real estate law and the legalese involved in easements have come to take over, it appears, the crossing issue.
Well, Commissioner Beard, if it can be a very brief history lesson, because we have several other bills on the calendar.
1980, the Staggers Rail Act was passed by Congress, and the big railroad companies, which had been suffering under many miles of light-density branch lines, like the one I represent, began to spin those off to entrepreneurs and others who were interested in preserving rail service in their area. State of Wisconsin, the state of Iowa just flat-out bought them, as did the state of South Dakota. Minnesota went another direction. We pretty much said goodbye unless the counties wanted to form rail authorities, which five counties centered around Redwood Falls did. Carver Sibley, Redwood, Yellow Medicine, and who am I missing? Renville counties formed a joint authority and bought 94 miles of track. They inherited a mess from Chicago and Northwestern. Basically, fees that hadn't been adjusted in decades for crossings, and many people didn't even know where the pipes were and what was going on, and so they had to clean that all up. And for the first several years of the Minnesota Valley's existence, they actually had, and I have in the audience two phone-a-friend type people, the executive director of the Redwood Area Economic Development Agency, who serves part-time as executive director of our rail authority, and the Sibley County attorney, whose job it was every time a utility wanted to cross our line, they had to run to five different courthouses and track down paperwork and figure out, okay, who's already here, where they bore, how deep does it have to be, or how tall do the poles have to be. Oh, by the way, you can't put a hole there because somebody's septic field is there. Do you get the picture? This is more complicated than I can describe in a Ways and Means Committee. I wish that I really wish I had been here for transportation or jobs and energy, Mr. Chairman, but I was out of town during those weeks. So I'm trying to help with a little policy bill here that is not going to work for several short line railroads, and this is why. One size does not fit all. Whenever we got in over our heads, basically, and realized we're a rail authority, we own a strip of land 94 miles long and 100 feet wide. That's what we do. We hire a railroad company to run that for us. We come before you and ask you, please help us rebuild the line because we have millions in investment waiting for new grain elevators and food processing facilities. We also have utilities, including MCI, who has fiber optic down our right-of-way for many miles. We're trying to be an answer to the broadband question in our region. We have the real estate. We want to be in the game with you as you deploy broadband in rural Minnesota, and I'm sure the other short lines do as well. But it takes a certain legal expertise, surveying, engineering, legal work, to know where these easements are and who's there. Furthermore, Mr. Chairman and members, Representative Hamilton, when we sell an easement to a gas company, for instance, we have a fiduciary relationship to protect the easement we've sold. We can't just let a farmer put a drain tile under there and hit the gas line, and that actually happened to us. We actually had a communications company represented by one of the companies that's trying to pass this bill come to us about 5 years ago and say, we want to put fiber under your track in the city of Bellevue. We said, here's the permit. We'll get busy looking and seeing who's there and where you have to be. Never heard from them again until a city council member called and said, whose gas line did they hit? What? Whose gas line did they hit? They went ahead and drilled in the public right-of-way without ever calling us again. Fortunately, it was a dead-end pipeline that had been capped, so there wasn't much of a fire. Wasn't much of a fire, but imagine if it had been. And so what that points out, if I can take a sidebar, Representative Hamilton, while I'm answering your question, if this bill becomes law and public rights-of-way are no longer under our control, who's responsible when the next gas line gets hit? That's what we think about. We worry about that at night. We're in the business of providing freight service to all comers in all of our communities. We have a valuable resource for our communities, a 100-foot strip of right-of-way. We have to know who's in it, where they are, and what they're doing with it. Is it a water pipe? Is it a petroleum pipeline? Is it gas? Is it drain tile? We need to know those things, and that doesn't happen for free. So I have here, if you wish, Mr. Chairman, a whole packet of our fee schedule, since people are concerned about that. The $1,250 that Representative Keel put in her bill, thank you for doing that, is the fee we currently charge for the application fee. That does not stay with our little rail authority. That goes to the engineering firm based, I think, in Nashville, who manages the real estate portfolios of many different short line railroads, because all short lines everywhere, unless you're a pretty big company, don't have this expertise on staff. We have a half-time person and a bunch of volunteers running our railroad company, our rail authority, to be precise. And so we have actually been pretty delighted with their service, the speed at which they turn permits, the speed and the order how they bring out of chaos when they're asking for engineering drawings and locations, and all the stuff they do to keep stuff apart and to protect then the infrastructure that's built. Once it's built, we have that obligation to protect that from the next guy who pays $1,250 and says, I want to bore under your railroad line. This affects the St. Louis County Rail Authority, the Lake County Rail Authority, about 12 other rail authorities around the state, as well as the state of Minnesota, Mr. Chairman. And so the bill is a lot further reaching than it might seem at first blush. And having served on both the Energy Committee and the Transportation Committees, I didn't think this was an issue that needed to come to the legislature. I thought we could probably all sit down over coffee and donuts and work it out. But here we are today. We will lose. The $100 a year is now gone, which means all the crossings that we have, and there are hundreds of them, we will get nothing else from that going forward. As I understand the bill, it doesn't affect existing contracts, except for the small matter of a court case that says that if it's in a public road right-of-way, we're not entitled to anything for keeping track of that. Mr. Chairman, there's a couple things else I could say about this. A money grab? No, hardly. We think our fees represent an exchange for value, the public safety, the protection of the assets, and just what it costs to have trained professionals actually do the job.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, it's nice to see he's kept his brevity.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to point out,
thank you, Representative Beard.
Just one closing comment. You know, the $1,250, if you're crossing our 100-foot-wide strip of dirt in Echo, Minnesota, we run three trains a week out there. Probably not a big deal. If you're crossing the Burlington Northern and they're three tracks wide and running 79 miles an hour, that's a big deal. $1,250 doesn't come close to beginning to cover the insurance, the investigations, the engineering, and all the things that are required in something like that.
Right. Thank you, Representative Commissioner Beard.
Commissioner, yes.
All right. Other discussion to the bill, House File 963, as amended. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to thank Representative Keel for including this inductive interference study. You know, I was very concerned when this came up in transportation. I've been concerned about rail safety, as many of you know, over the last few years. And there was some testimony that some of these electronics, some of the communication infrastructure can interfere with signals. And I thought that that, you know, could present a real safety issue. And so I just have a question, Representative Keel, or if there's others,
people with expertise, how this exactly works, so that there's going to be a study, and then if the railroad is going to run a test of surrounding signals, and then if it checks out, then it's okay. In subdivision 4 here, when you describe the study, I'm just not exactly sure what the trigger mechanism is. You know, the data is collected, and then it says something like after 30 days, there'll be some notice. I just want to get a sense from A to Z how this study process and works exactly.
Thanks. Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I'd like to phone a friend on this issue.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Ahern. Mike Ahern again. Representative Hornstein, the process that's laid out in the bill, we followed the example of the state of Iowa, which basically created that process. The threshold is power lines over 150 kilovolts, high voltage power lines. And when there is a high voltage power line that the railroad thinks could raise the question of inductive interference, they have the right to require the utility doing the crossing to hire an engineer approved by the railroad, to investigate. And based on that investigation, either they go forward or they don't. If there is an issue, they don't go forward. But if there is, there's additional language in there, again, which we took from Iowa, which suggests that there's no self-help here. You have to notify the railroad, even if you don't believe that there's a problem. But before you energize that line, you let the railroad know, and then they check it out, and you go forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other discussion to the bill as amended? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Keel, is there anyone that's still opposed to this bill?
Representative Keel.
I would surmise from Commissioner Beard's testimony that short lines are opposed. I've not heard recently, but I'm thinking the amount is a little bit low for the Class 1 railroads.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Keel, do you have a list of users that support this?
Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, yes, quite a few that are supporting this bill, the utilities of all kinds.
Other discussion to the bill as amended? See no further. Representative Torkelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to express my concern for the short line railroad that runs through my district. I know they work very hard to survive and serve the businesses in my area that depend on railroad to move ag and other products to market and to get them processed, and on them especially. And I just want to express my concern, Mr. Chair.
Other discussion? Seeing no further discussion, the Chair will renew his motion that House File 963 as amended be referred to the General Register. I'll withdraw that motion. Oh. Mr. Apitz, did you want to say something?
Very quickly.
I guess we had, I'm sorry, Mr. Apitz, we had talked about you possibly testifying, and I forgot. I'm sorry. So welcome to the committee, Mr. Apitz.
Mr. Chairman, John Apitz, with the law firm of Messerly & Kramer. I represent an organization called the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association, which is essentially the railroads here in the state of Minnesota. And I just want to respond to Representative Murphy's question. We're not there yet. We have not achieved an understanding yet of the appropriate fees for this. We've been working for several weeks trying to come up with a resolution that assures their safety, and there's adequate fair compensation. There is not adequate fair compensation for use of the property or even to cover the cost of processing an application when a railroad receives one. So it's a question of fairness, and I don't think this bill is there. That's all I have to say.
Mr. Appas, as long as we've got you up there, let me ask you one question. In terms of the $1,250 charge that a railroad would get for a crossing on this, are there any other charges that the railroad can charge beyond that? I don't know, legal fees, easement fees, in terms of recording fees, things like that?
Mr. Chairman, I think some of the concern of the utilities, and I understand that, in bringing this bill forward is that there are 20 different railroads in the state of Minnesota, and there can be a multiple of different kinds of issues and fees that they have to face. And I appreciate their desire for some sort of uniformity. It makes it easier for them, obviously, to cross railroad property. And that's what we're talking about here, is we're talking about being able to get across. The bill provides for no other fees other than the cost of a flagger. So, and a flagger is a person who goes out and makes sure the train isn't coming when the utility is out performing the work on the railroad tracks. There was an unfortunate incident a little while ago, a couple weeks ago, I think you heard about it, where there was a truck on an Amtrak crossing, and that train crashed into the truck and derailed, and people were hurt and all sorts of things. We just can't allow that to happen. Legal fees, other sorts of fees, Mr. Chairman, no. I could just add that the range of fees, and I'm sure this is part of their frustration, is, for instance, as Representative Beard, as Commissioner Beard said, about $1,250 to process the application, and then an annual fee for the use of the property. It's like renting land. It's like renting farmland. Currently of about, I think it's $300 a year. The Class 1s have a different sort of procedure that they use, the big railroads. Burlington Northern charges a one-time $3,600 fee to process an application. That's good for 25 years. The Union Pacific charges a application and licensing fee of about $1,750. The CP Rail charges just one standard fee as well. So I understand the need for some uniformity. However, I think having the railroads subsidize another industry is just patently unfair from our perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Appas. Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Mr. Appas, you know, the range for the one-time fee from your own testimony is anywhere from $750 up to $3,600. And in addition to that, they can charge an annual fee. And there's no cap on that annual fee. And that's where the concern was coming from, and that's why I first chose to introduce this bill. And so I would ask that the railroads, the short line and others, continue to work with Representative Keel, because we want to be fair to these short for the railroads, but we also need to rein this in, because I believe that there is some of this is starting to get too high and out of control, in my opinion, and therefore this is why the legislation is being brought forward.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, very briefly, Mr. Appas.
Very briefly. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, there is a process in law now that was put in place about 20 years ago. It's Minnesota's Chapter 237.04, and this is in addition to that. 237.04 allows a utility which believes that the fee is in excess to go to the Department of Commerce and have the fee determined, and the standard is the diminution of value of the property. So in other words, it's what the it's the impact of that that utility across the railroad tracks, which is the value that can be charged. If you don't like the fee, go to the Department of Commerce. It can be worked out there. That's been in existence for 20 years, and it's been used once or twice, I think.
Hey, members, thank you, Mr. Appas. Seeing no further questions, all in favor of House File 963 as amended being referred to the General Register, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. House File 963 as amended is referred to the General Register. Okay, members, we have the four remaining bills deal with labor contracts. What I'm going to do is have Representative Drazkowski, who I think has the bill that maybe will have the most discussion, start off first. It's my intention to take Representative Drazkowski's bill. We will then take up my bill, House File 3255, Representative Cornish's bill, House File 3584, And I've had a lot of discussion, and I did try to reach Representative Lilly this morning, and he's over there. All right. Well, I didn't connect with him. I think what, as I understand underneath the rules, gives us the most flexibility in determining how to make sure these labor agreements are passed is to keep Representative Lilly's bill in the committee at this time, because as I understand from a indirect conversation with the chief clerk, that would allow for it to more quickly be brought forward and incorporate one of the other bills on the floor to match it up with the with what the Senate did if we chose to do that path. And so, members, I do want to get these bills passed. It's important that we get them passed. There's a variety of different ways that we could do that. And as I understand from talking to our leadership, who has talked to the chief clerk, keeping Representative Lilly's bill here allows us the most flexibility. And so that's what I'm looking at doing. Given our schedule, I don't know if Representative Lilly wants to present his bill. We certainly can at the end here. I don't know that that's necessary, Representative Lilly. And maybe I can have Representative Drazkowski start presenting his bill, and maybe you can come up and talk to me quick, since we never had a chance to actually connect this morning. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, there seems to be a conflict then in terms of your comments earlier in the meeting that this was probably our last meeting. So when you talk about...
I said probably, not necessarily. Probably,
yeah,
there's multiple different avenues to accomplish this.
So, Mr. Chairman,
possible that we might have another meeting, too.
Okay, that's what I wanted to have clarified. There could be another meeting on the Lilly bill, because that is the one bill that covers basically, at least if it's the Senate language that's used, all of the contracts, as I understand it. Is that
yes? All the contracts are in the Lilly bill. Yes, sir.
Yeah, and it is passed. And
all the contracts are in the other three bills. Yeah. Collectively.
So, Mr. Chairman, what is your intent then with the other three? Is it going to be one or all of them, or what? What is your goal there with the three bills?
Representative Carlson, my intent for the other three is that they would all pass out to the General Register today. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but all three of the other bills don't have companions. Mr. Chair, I serve on the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. Usually we pass out one bill, both in the House and the Senate, that match up, that have all of the contracts. So can you tell me how it is that you plan to match up those other three bills so we actually have approval of these contracts, Mr. Chair?
Representative Hillstrom, as I understand it, there's a couple different ways we could do it. One is we could pass... all three bills on the floor. There could be a public informal discussion between the Senate and the House on these three bills and what the Senate passed. Once there was an agreement reached, we could bring forward Representative Lilly's bill and incorporate that agreement into it and send it to the Senate for ratification. Alternatively, I understand another possibility, which is not available if we bring Representative Lilly's bill out today, is that we could bring Representative Lilly's bill out later and substitute the language of one of the other bills, say Representative Drazkowski's bill or my bill, into it so that that bill was available on the floor. I understand that's a procedural vote on the floor. So there's, and I guess I don't think a decision has been made on which is the best way to proceed. But that's two possible ways we could proceed.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think the proper way to proceed is to actually put the contracts forward for the body to vote on, which is Representative Lilly's bill. Again, I served on the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. The contracts are the same in the House and the Senate if you take Representative Lilly's bill. I think that that's the proper path. I think that there should not be political game playing with labor contracts. And, Mr. Chair, I think that if you send bills that don't have companions moving, I think that's exactly what you are doing.
Well, Representative Hillstrom, I guess we've got a different point of view on that. Because, I mean, Representative Hillstrom, it is my commitment that, I mean, I certainly think we need to pass these bills. There's just a variety of different ways to do it, and frankly, as I understand it, if we pass Representative Lilly's bill out today, we, on one scenario, reduce our flexibility. But Representative Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what flexibility you're looking for. The cleanest way would be to pass the Lilly bill out today. What flexibility are you looking for? When you keep a bill in committee, that's keeping it further from passage. And I get a little nervous with your earlier comments, even though now you've kind of opened up the door that there may be or possibly would be another committee hearing, but we have no assurance that there would be. So I would think the cleanest way would be to pass out the one bill that has a companion in the Senate, and that's the Lilly bill, and it's the clean bill in the sense that it has virtually all of the contracts in it. You know, you have public employees across the state of Minnesota that are very interested in seeing their contracts ratified, and I think the procedure you've just described really puts that at risk. And I think we would much prefer from the minority perspective that the Lilly bill go forward.
Okay. Well, Representative Carlson, I'm certainly committed to, I know that it's necessary to get contracts ratified, and I'm committed to working to do that. But let me go ahead and start out, because I know time's limited. There are people here that have come to see this discussion. Representative Druskowski moves that House File 3585 be referred to the General Register. And Representative Lilly, while he's doing that, why don't you come up here so you can talk to me quick, because we missed each other this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, House File 3585 is a bill that contains four of the major contracts brought together and brought through into the Subcommittee on Employee Relations during their interim. Includes the AFSCME contract, the MAPE contract, the middle management contract, and the Minnesota Nurses contract. It ratifies all four of them as agreed upon, or ratifies the agreements between the administration and the unions as presented and brought to us. Members, it also includes the ratification of two compensation plans. One is the commissioner's plan, and the other is a managerial plan. There's an amendment, Mr. Chair, that will I would like to bring forward to take the commissioner's plan out of this bill, and its intention, as I understand, Representative Cornish, to bring it forward with modified language in his bill as a different approach for that particular one. Members, it also includes three reforms, labor reforms in here, labor law reforms. The first of them is very much a pro-worker reform that provides for the ability for money that is taken from Minnesota's public sector workers in dues to ensure that it's not spent on campaign activity. And what it does is says that money that is taken in the form of dues must be used for the benefits of the members rather than used in a campaign activity. As a matter of fact, instructs the unions that the union bosses that if they want to do campaign activity that they need to accept that money voluntarily and spend it from an account that's specifically for that. The second of the these small reforms, Mr. Chair and members, is one that provides for public it augments the public meeting law that we already have on the books and provides for advanced notice for both the Subcommittee on Employee Relations and for the public generally by placing notice of labor negotiations for these and the other state contracts, that it provides that notification for the people of Minnesota so that they actually know that the meetings are happening. I've got an amendment to clarify that as to, Mr. Chair. One that, and that provision, of course, will benefit both workers and taxpayers who don't really know about these meetings when they do happen. Then the third reform is one that provides that it would require actually a majority vote of the Subcommittee on Employer Relations to move forward an interim contract rather than a tie vote, which currently is a standard in law. Nowhere else, Mr. Chair, in the world that I am aware of, a tie vote affirms and moves forward something, so this puts it to a majority vote. That's the bill, Mr. Chair, members. Appreciate your support, Mr. Chair. Again, there's two amendments that I'm interested in bringing forward. That's the A-16 and the A-18.
Okay. Representative Drazkowski moves the A-16 amendment. Representative Drazkowski, if you can describe the A-16 amendment.
This simply removes, Mr. Chair, the commissioner's plan from the bill, and it's Representative Cornish's intent to put it into his bill that has other contracts in it.
All right. Any discussion to the A-16 amendment? All in favor of the A-16 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. The A-16 amendment is adopted. And members, I'll move the A-18 amendment. Representative Drazkowski and I have had some discussions about Section 3 and how it works, and I guess I feel that in terms of the negotiations, things will flow more smoothly with the adoption of the A-18 amendment and allow for discussions that would better enable agreements to be able to be reached. And Representative Drazkowski, do you have any other comments you want to make on the A-18 amendment?
Not really a lot, Mr. Chair. It will make it clearer and remove some ambiguity that was in the bill originally.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So do we have some testimony from the folks who actually negotiate these contracts about what the impact of this amendment will do to the current process, Mr. Chair?
You know, we have, I think that they would probably be favorable to it, but we can bring someone forward. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, a follow-up to the Hillstrom question. There's this amendment that would be interesting to know or get some feedback, as she points out, on what this amendment would do. But then would it be possible in state government finance, we had testimony from Elliot Side, who's with AFSCME, to comment either on this amendment or on this particular bill before it's voted upon.
Yes, and Representative Carlson, Mr. Side had actually asked to testify, and I had him on my list. And so if he is here and wants to come forward now and maybe comment on the amendment and as well as make other comments, that would probably be a good time for him to come forward.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I would appreciate that. That was important testimony in state government finance, so thank you.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Will the testifiers be available for questions for members of the committee?
Yes, if they're here, I would expect that we could ask them questions.
Excellent. Thank you.
Mr. Side, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for the opportunity to appear before the committee and address some of the issues raised by Representative Drazkowski in this bill.
And Mr. Side, I wonder if you could specifically now comment on the A-18 amendment. I don't know how much you've had an opportunity to study it, but that is what we're on. I know that actually I saw your testimony in, I believe it was state government finance, and I know that you were concerned about negotiations and how they take place, and I felt that this would frankly address some of your concerns. And I guess if you could address the A-18 amendment, we can maybe act on that, and then I'll give you a chance to comment on the bill after we've done the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Yes, the whole issue, this is an amendment to the section, I believe, sir, related to the public involvement in negotiations. Is that correct, sir?
That's, sir. Yes, that's right, Mr. Side.
Mr. Chairman and members, as I indicated in prior commission meetings, most of negotiations aren't as flamboyant as most people think. They're about trying to solve problems, and problem solving involves a lot of detail, a lot of discussion. The purpose of having these meetings in a setting that isn't as open as this one is so that the parties don't sit there and, and posture for each other, but rather seek to find actual solutions to real problems. That's what we do in negotiations. Very little of it is posturing. Most of it is problem solving, problems that the members may have in their work sites, or that the employer may have in administering either the collective bargaining agreement or rationalizing the delivery of services. What this provision does is, the entire provision in its entirety does, is make that process way more difficult, because it will engender the ability of people, rather than try to solve problems, but rather to posture to get to deal with the public that may be involved. And as I suggested in prior meetings, and I'm sure every member of this committee, because these are committee chairs, I've been coming here for 35 years. Most of the negotiations that take place around the bills that will finally pass here don't take place in these committees. They take place in rooms and offices in and around the Capitol. And if we're going to do this in the collective bargaining process, Mr. Chairman and members, I would suggest that we do this for all of you, that every room, that every office have TV cameras and audio, so that the public can really hear what the negotiations are about a bill. If it's bringing up a clean bill or a bill that's got poison pills in it like this or anything else, I don't see how this advances the process. I think it's an attempt to destroy the process. And I know that the idea that I have, that you all should have the same ability to have these TV cameras and notices in every room in the Capitol, might be perceived to be over the top. But it's the same problem. You meet privately at times, so you can work problems out, not so you can create more problems. And so this process is putting an onus on collective bargaining negotiations that you don't put on yourselves. And I don't understand what the necessity. The Mr. Chairman, these contracts have to come up to the public. They come up to the public at the time they reach the Employee Relations Committee and committees like this. All the details, everything is public information at the end of the day. And so I don't understand how this improves the process, in my opinion. Just like it would deter your processes here, it will deter the collective bargaining process.
Okay, Mr. Seid, I wonder if you're not speaking more to the language as it is now than the amendment, because the amendment does delete lines 27 through 34 on page 4, which I think is addressing one of your concerns.
I'll take a look at that, Mr. Chairman.
Other discussion to the A18 amendment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, again, thank you. First of all, I don't think this belongs in a ratification bill. It ought to be considered as policy that we could have discussed. This is the first time I'm even seeing this. So I appreciate your attempt, Mr. Chairman, to make this better. But, you know, it's like making a bad package better is still a bad package. I would argue that the whole package is bad. It shouldn't be on the bill to begin with. It should have been a policy piece that came up earlier, so we could have had time, as was said in an earlier speaker, to be able to really talk about these things and the impact it has, rather than do it at the last minute when people's livelihoods are on the line. So I think first of all, I appreciate the attempt to improve a bad situation and make it a little better. I still think it's an unnecessary a solution in search of a problem. We've had this law in place since 1973. I'm talking about Chapter 179, the Public Employee Labor Relations Act. That's 43 years. In that 43 years, we've had only two work stoppages at that whole time. Every other time, contracts have been settled without tremendous acrimony. They've gotten done. They get ratified in a rule-governed way. This law has been working for public policy. It helps both workers and it helps the employer. How does it do that? Because it rationalizes the rules so that everyone is operating under the same set of rules and everyone understands what the processes are to get them done and avoids the disruption of work. It allows work to be done in a more rule-governed way when both sides understand what the rules are. And if they do disagree, it provides for a procedure, the grievance procedure ending in binding arbitration, in order to deal with it. I don't believe that the system's broken. This is a solution in search of a problem. And I would suggest, even in this situation, that you place these same inhibitions, that's what I would call them, the same light of day, if you will, on yourselves that you're asking to place on negotiations, again, which are meant to solve problems, not meant to, for bombastic talks or something that comes out in the movies. This is really just about problem solving. So, sir, in a quick look, and it's the first time I've had a chance to look at it, it appears to improve what was there. I think the whole provision is unnecessary, and I think it should have been done. If the majority would like to do this, or Mr. Drzkowski would like to do this, Mr. Chair, I suggest it be done in a policy committee in a future session so that there be ample time to discuss what the pros and cons are and what the impact of changing a process that's been in place for 43 years and working, what that does. It's a major public policy change, sir.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Side. And members, I guess, Mr. Side, I really think the A18 amendment, well, I understand you don't like the bill. I think the A18 amendment addresses the issues that you talked about in terms of posturing and so forth in public, and essentially turns Section 3 into an issue of more providing information to people in advance. This amendment has been posted for a bit, and so I think that this does address many of those concerns you brought up, although I understand that you have other concerns. And Mr. Side, let me just recognize you for one more brief comment, then I'll go to Representative Hillstrom.
Mr. Chairman, I know that many members in this room, in the legislature and also in the audience, follow our website. When we have negotiation sessions coming up, they are posted. They're posted on our website to our members, and it doesn't require a special key to get into it. Anybody can see it. We also send out notices that negotiations are going on, and in addition, we issue negotiator's report, which, again, are public on our website. So besides anything that's going on publicly, we do that with our members, and that basically, since on our website, is already there. So, I just feel this is, despite the attempt to try to make it better, Mr. Chairman, I believe it's a bad provision.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Side. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Chair, I guess this question might be for you. My time in the legislature, serving actually on the Subcommittee on Employee Relations quite a number of years, quite often we have folks who try to insert public policy pieces that don't belong in the contracts, but the legislature tends to frown upon that. We believe that clean votes on these labor contracts are important and that the legislature doesn't belong meddling in these labor contracts once we've set the rules. So, Mr. Chair, if you're concerned about Representative Drzkowski's policy as he's putting forward, why didn't you just delete these provisions from the bill and allow the labor contracts to have a clean vote as is custom and practice here in the legislature rather than trying to put lipstick on this pig? Because, Mr. Chair, I believe that Representative Drzkowski is trying to take this state in the area of Wisconsin, in the way of Wisconsin, and trying to strip away public employees from their ability to organize and unionize, Mr. Chair, and I think that's wrong for Minnesota.
Okay, well, Representative Hillstrom, I think your point is more on the bill as opposed to the amendment, and so I'll respond to that in a minute, but I guess I'd like to get focused back on the amendment if we can. Does anyone else have any other comments on the amendment? Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, the A18 amendment essentially guts the provision that Representative Drzkowski put into the bill. I get that. It's still lipstick on a pig. When they negotiate my contract for the pipe fitters, good God, I'm so happy that I'm retired now 3 years, but I was still watched as they negotiated the contract. I got notifications by email from the president, the vice president, the two of the e-board members about what was going on, when they were going to be meeting. They brought it up at my union meeting, how many times they met, when they met, what their plans were, the issues that they were going over. I don't believe that the public employees are a whole lot different. Maybe they have less of a percentage of people going to the union meeting than we do at my local. So to reiterate what's already been said, although you're gutting his bill, his provision, which is probably a good thing, it doesn't have a place, this section, this whole page actually, doesn't really have a place in our employee contract negotiations. And your amendment, although it, again, as I said, makes this bill You just put lipstick on the pig. This is a wrong way to go. We should, if you don't like what negotiators negotiate, you either fire the negotiators and hire new ones, or you vote against it. And I've seen the contracts go down, and I've watched the business manager's face look kind of ashen. But this has no place, whether it's your amendment or Representative Dazkowski's pieces to this. So adding this amendment only basically kind of kicks sand in everybody's face as far as I'm concerned, and I'd be voting against it on the principle that it shouldn't be in the bill, period.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A18 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. Motion prevails. The A18 amendment is adopted. And Representative Dreskowski, you didn't want to offer the A17 amendment. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. Okay, members, I'm not aware of any other amendments, so we have House File 3585 as amended before us. And, Mr. Side, I guess you know, we are running late. I already did give you a chance to testify on the whole bill. Is there something else you have to say?
Well, Mr. Chairman, again, thank you for that opportunity. I spoke on the amendment. What I do want to say is this, on two provisions that are in here in addition to the contract, sir, and members of the committee. First of all, in the interim agreement, that's a radical change to the process. And I know Representative Dreskowski has said in many meetings that he's never seen a tie vote be affirmative. There's a small organization called the Supreme Court of the United States that when they have a tie vote, the lower body's position prevails. And in fact, that just happened in Friedrichs versus the California Teachers Association. So, in fact, the tie vote does affirm, in this case, in the case of Supreme Court, a lower body. Not to mention also things like pocket vetoes and other things. So I don't think this is extraordinary or out of the ordinary. The reason that the law exists the way it does, Mr. Chairman and members, is because while this happens here, the workers have negotiated a contract in good faith. And the idea is that people have those contracts go in effect if they're voted up or if they're not voted on at all or if there's a tie vote. And you always have the opportunity, as you have today and as you will have in the next 7 days, to vote the contract up or down by majority vote. So the majority rule is still embedded in the current legislation, and the change in the interim agreement process is simply meant to delay, stall, and I think unfairly punish the workers of this state who've negotiated a contract in good faith, and by the way, in my units make about $40,000 a year, and do the work that makes everyone in this committee and everyone in this legislature look good every day of the year with the services they provide. And yet year after year they have to come up here and be treated like they're some kind of criminals. All they want is for their contract that they negotiated in good faith to be heard, to be voted on, up or down. And then we'll deal with the consequences of that. As for the other amendment to this bill, which again, these are unprecedented things to bog down and put poison pills in contract ratification bills, which is on the way money is raised, I would let you know, as I have in other committees, Mr. Chairman and members, that the process that we do this by is extremely democratic. And that the principle that Representative Dreskowski, like Scott Walker, is working on is that somehow that workers, if they disagree with the result that the union is doing, then they should not have to pay anything at all. Mr. Chairman and members, if that was the case, I don't agree with Representative Dreskowski. I pay a lot of taxes to the state of Minnesota. So do all my members up here. And maybe we should be able to withhold our taxes so we don't have to pay for Mr. Dreskowski's salary because we don't agree with him. And if that was the case, there'd be no representative democracy, Mr. Chairman. And what we have in the union is representative democracy. Things are voted on by members, executive boards. As I pointed out in other committees, we report our entire fiduciary expenditures, everything we do on LM2 reports. We've gotten legislative audits on how we conduct fair share. We have passed those with 100% grades. So, Mr. Chairman and members, these are unnecessary, they're dangerous, and I don't understand, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Dreskowski is constantly saying he wants government to act like a business. Target super value. Every corporation in the state doesn't get up every 2 years and or every session and attack its workforce and then expect to get high productivity out of them. And yet you have here in this room and the people we represent the greatest productive state workforce in the nation. It's time to stop beating them up like Scott Walker does, pass a clean contract, and get on with it. Thank you.
Representative Druskowski, do you want to respond at all?
Well, Mr. Chair, it sounded more like a political rally than discussion on a bill, but so I was kind of disappointed. But the reality is, members, and I know that Representative Hillstrom and others and Representative Mahoney were talking about and characterizing the amendment. Actually, the chair and I talked about this amendment, and it was an amendment that both of us agreed to bring forward. And Representative Mahoney, it does not gut the provision. As a matter of fact, if you look at subdivision 3 of 179A.14, characterized on lines 4.13 through 4.15, we currently have it in law that these meetings have to be in public. It says it in law. Basically, what we're doing with the amended provision here is saying that you have to tell us when the meetings are. That's all we're doing. So very reasonable. The other two provisions are also very reasonable. And I'll also remind members that this bill fully ratifies the agreed agreements between the unions and the administration. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, I think that I'm going to recognize members to speak, but I guess I think everyone knows how they're going to vote on this bill as amended, yes or no. So I think, you know, let's keep our comments to a minimum here. I don't know that anyone's going to be convincing anyone of anything. But Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think what you just heard is that the desire of the unions that sat down with management and bargained a contract in good faith, and there's always give and take in that bargaining process, simply want their contracts ratified. And the other issues that are in this bill should have been brought up as separate issues, totally separate from the contracts that, were being asked to ratify. So, Mr. Chairman, I would encourage people to vote no on this particular bill, and I would also request a roll call vote.
Roll call is requested. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And first of all, Representative Druskowski, thank you. Thank you for standing up for the silent majority in the state of Minnesota. It is no surprise to know anyone in this body that after AFSCME came out here and tried to unionize independent business owners in their very own home, that workers would be concerned. Let's make no mistake about it that things don't happen in a vacuum in this place, Representative Druskowski. When those individuals came up here and used their political power to try to force independent business owners who take care of kids in their own homes, went and knocked on their doors and tried to force them into a union. Businesses they own. That people in Minnesota are going to get upset and they're going to be concerned. And Representative Druskowski, I think we've got a reading comprehension problem with our friends on the other side of the aisle. We've kind of seen throughout this legislative session. Early on, they complained about corporate welfare as part of an unemployment insurance tax cut, and then they all voted in favor of it, right? Then we saw them bemoan their support or opposition to skyscrapers and corporate benefits, but then they all defend corporate subsidies on the House floor. And today they falsely claim to you their support for the working class and standing up for the working man, when in fact, Representative Druskowski, when you look in your bill, all you're simply asking is that workers have a choice in whether their dollars are going to be used to pay for political contributions. It's nothing more complicated than that in Section 2, Representative Druskowski. And I want to thank you, and I want to thank you on behalf of the members of AFSCME, Education Minnesota, and SEIU who have contacted me to say they want to have that choice. They don't like having political contributions forcibly taken out of their paychecks. Thank you for your work, Representative Druskowski.
Representative Mahoney.
Let's see. You know, Representative Druskowski, Representative Garofalo, you know, AFSCME went out to organize. They took a shot at it, and they lost. That does happen in organizing, unfortunately. For me, as I look at it, it's unfortunate because I think you will always win when you organize, when you are organized. in terms of better conditions, better money, better any number of different things. And it gives you a stronger voice when you talk as a thousand rather than as one. And being against skyscraper owners that live in Florida versus subsidies that help businesses start in the state of Minnesota, whether it's in Shakopee or in Eastside St. Paul or Maple Grove or Jackson or Worthington or any place else, I'll defend subsidies to businesses that are located and owned in the state of Minnesota any day of the week. But when you continue to try to give tax breaks to people that live in Florida, Texas, L.A., New York, I thought you had heard about those New York values before, Mr. Garofalo. And I didn't realize you liked New York values. But to the bill. If we're going to get off on tangents, I can too. I've done that with you all session. Voluntary contributions. What an insult. The way I vote at my union meeting doesn't have any value to it. You're going to come in and say, oh, if 75% of our members say this is a good idea, we should use these dollars this way and that way. No, that 25% gets to rule. Well, in that case, I want to vote on the bonding bill and I want to write the damn bonding bill because, you know, we're at about 45% over here, so I guess we, as the minority, should write it. Of course, we might. At this particular point, the Senate's working on that. But it is really insulting to say that the leaders that people elect can't make decisions to use the money that is collected in dues, whether it's to pay for office supplies or negotiations or anything else in the particular world. I can go through this, the public meetings, the new language in section whatever it is on page 4, the A3 amendment. I'm glad that we're going to have a roll call because I'm going to be voting against this. You put a poison pill in that you know can't pass so that our public employees are going to have to work on an old contract because that's the way it works. These contracts don't pass. They work on the contract that was last negotiated. And what it is you're trying to keep employees from getting their hard-earned raise. The way we treat our employees in this state, which was earlier stated, is abysmal. More often than not, we do things with our finance bills because we've all been finance chairs. We come in with some idea and say, "Oh, you're going to absorb that cost," which means that employee, rather than working 40 hours a week, works 42. Problem is, they typically don't get paid for that 42, or the commissioners have to decide how they're going to figure that out, or they don't hire somebody to absorb that particular cost. So we should be passing the bill as it was negotiated. That's been our history. I can have the argument, I could go all day on the arguments that you've got in your bill here, but it should be done in a policy committee, not as an add-on to a negotiated, in good faith, contract. That's just unacceptable. I wouldn't accept them tossing on at the last minute a drug testing at Flint Hills Refinery. When they decided to do that, that went through our contract negotiations and was part of the deal that they cut. When they did criminal background checks for us in our union, that was part of the negotiation. That was not just arbitrarily tossed on to us by the owners or by the union. We as members got to stand up in our union meeting and have it explained to us and then vote on it. What you're doing is you're saying 201 people get to decide what 30,000 employees get. That's not fair. They negotiated it. They hired somebody to negotiate for them, and the state hired somebody to come up with the best deal that we could get out of that particular contract. And that's right somewhere in here. But now you put poison pills on. You are correct, Mr. Chair. We all know how we're going to vote, so I won't go any farther.
Okay. Members, I think we do all know how we're going to vote. I've got two more people that have been on the list for a while, and then I would like to move to the vote. That's Representative McNamara and Hornstein. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. Representative Draskowski, a couple things. I want to put things into perspective. I come from a family. My father worked for the state of Minnesota for 41 years for the Department of Transportation. I can't remember as a kid growing up, I got information when he was, and I think it was Ask Me 7 at the time, then he was MAPE, then he was a member of the commissioner's plan or whatever you call it. So I know what it's like to be around public employees. Representative Drazkowski, as I've done before, when public employees have been mistreated, I want to apologize for you right now for the way you were treated in this committee. The way you were talked to by the president was wrong. No way you should be treated that way. You come here and you make $31,100, and to be talked like that and to be treated that way is wrong. I will also put it into perspective that I'm one of the few people, maybe the only one at this table, that has never taken $1 of PAC, lobbyist, or special interest money. And Representative Drazkowski is too. I thank you for that. And to be here and say that you automatically should take money out of the hardworking people, and I will say this, folks, nobody has knocked on more doors in the last 14 years than I. And I probably have as many state employees as almost anybody. And I hear over and over and over again, Denny, why do you take money out of my check when I don't support where it goes? It's not right. Why don't I have a voice in not taking that money out? I don't want to be part of that. That's not right, folks. That's not right. Maybe 50% of the state employees aren't Republicans. I don't know. But I know there's a significant percentage of them that don't feel it's right that almost all the money goes to one party. Now, I've gotten those checks, Representative Drazkowski, he sent to me. I always send them back because I don't take them. I'm endorsed by a number of labor unions and very proud of it. And members, two specific members at this table call these contracts a pig. These are contracts for the hardworking Minnesotans that are so doggone nice for us. And to refer to these contracts as a pig is absolutely wrong. I take offense to that. They called it lipstick on a pig. Representative Drazkowski, your bill is a labor contract. Now, you're making a couple adjustments to that. Maybe we don't agree with them. Maybe we do. That's separate. But the reference to this bill and this contract is a pig, I take offense to. And members, I will also say to the members of the audience, it's inappropriate, and I would never, as chair of my committee, have accepted you applauding to one specific comments made. That's inappropriate action to be done in this room, and I commend Representative Knobloch maybe for letting it go, but I can guarantee you I would have banged the gavel and would have instructed the security to take anybody out of the room that acted like that in that way. That is inappropriate. This is not a political show here. This is real stuff, folks. These are contracts for people. Representative Drazkowski feels strong about what he's bringing forward. And you can agree or disagree with it, but it's inappropriate for some of the actions the way we act here. Representative Drazkowski, I absolutely will be voting to support this contract and to move it forward, and we will have fruitful discussion. And you do not want to turn this into Wisconsin. I don't, and I hope you don't, and that's not what this bill is. And members, thank you. Thank you, Chairman.
Representative Hornstein, Representative...
To that particular point, I referenced the add-on to Representative Drazkowski's bill as a pig. I did not call the contracts that were negotiated in good and fair faith without all the added stuff that was added a pig. I called Drazkowski's amendments to this particular bill or add-on language, whatever you want to term it as a pig. And it is a pig, and I'll stand by those words. And if anybody's offended by it, so be it.
Mr. Chairman. I'm going to recognize Representative Hornstein. Representative Hornstein.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just going full circle to the initial comment that was made about we're hearing these bills because to provide flexibility. And I think I've figured out what the flexibility is here after this hearing. It's flexibility to gut a negotiated good faith agreement, which is purpose is to delay and stall implementation of that agreement. So that's why I'm voting no, Mr. Chair, because we don't need this kind of flexibility. We need flexibility to just uphold the negotiations that happen in good faith. And that's, I think, what's happening here. And that's why I think we should vote this down and proceed with the Lilly approach, which is the correct approach.
The clerk will take the roll on House File 3585 as amended.
Knobloch?
Yes.
Albright.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Carlson.
No.
Hornish.
No.
Davids.
Yes.
Dean.
Yes.
Detmer.
Yes.
Draskowski.
Yes.
Garofalo.
Yes.
Gunther.
Yes.
Eckbarth. Hamilton.
No.
Hillstrom.
No.
Weinstein.
No.
Kahn.
No.
Liebling.
No.
Loon.
Yes.
Mahoney.
No.
McNamara.
Yes.
Murphy.
No.
Nornis.
Yes.
Pilowski.
No.
Hoppy.
No.
Torkelson.
Yes.
Erdahl.
Yes.
Wagenius.
No.
There being 14 ayes and 12 nays, House Bill 3585, as amended, is referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and members, we have a couple of other labor contract bills, which I think will not be as controversial. Representative Cornish moves that House Bill 3584 be referred to the General Register. And Representative Cornish, you have the A3 amendment. Representative Cornish moves the A3 amendment. Representative Cornish, why don't you describe which labor contracts are in your bill and then describe the A3 amendment.
I'll wait for it to quiet down a little bit. Mr. Chair and members, what this bill does is ratify a contract for those employees in the executive branch to include the conservation officers, state troopers, Bureau of Criminal Apprehension agents, fugitive apprehension task force, gambling enforcement, insurance fraud specialists in the Department of Commerce, correctional guards, and radio communications officers. And this is ratifies the 2.5% across-the-board increase in performance-based increases that they receive. They've been negotiated in good faith by my fellow union members. That I was the president of the union for 3 terms, and some of the people I negotiated contracts with for the union are in the building at this time, and most of these are law enforcement positions. And I would request that we get a positive vote. And the A3 amendment, you want me to describe that?
Yes, sir.
The A3 amendment adds on the commissioner's plan. There were some people that were the unrepresented by a union, but they were law enforcement officers in different positions, and this would add the commissioner's plan for these people on to 3584 in that group.
All right. All in favor? Any questions on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A3 amendment is adopted. Discussion to House File 3584 as amended. Seeing no discussion, all in favor of House File 3584 as amended being referred to the General Register, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 3584 as amended is referred to the General Register. And members, I will move House File 3255 be referred to the General Register. Just one second. I have to confer with Mr. Stone on something. Okay, members, I'll move that House File 3255 be referred to the General Register. And members, this ratifies 4 of the MinSCU contracts, the Minnesota State University Administrative and Service Faculty, the Interfaculty Organization, the Minnesota State College Faculty, also the State Residential Schools Education Association, the Office of Higher Education Unclassified Personnel Plan, and the personnel plan for the Minnesota State College and Universities Administrators. Is there any discussion to House File 3255? Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just wondering why these, and I'm not on any committees that have heard any of these agreements before, but I'm wondering why I'm don't think I see on your bill here the same kind of provisions that were added to Representative Drazkowski's bill that are so controversial and that we just spent so much time on. And by the way, I had raised my hand as well on that bill because I wanted to say that I really didn't know how I was going to vote. I don't know why everybody assumes we all know, because I, of course, would like to ratify these contracts, but I frankly did not want to. I wanted to vote yes, but didn't feel I could because of the poison pill in the other bill. So I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, why we are engaged in the process that we are, and why the provisions that are included that we consider poison pills are in one group, imposed on one group, and not on all. I haven't seen this process before where we've split the contracts up in this way, but one would think that what would be good for the goose would be good for the gander when it comes to these provisions about use of union funds and so on. And I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, if you know, why we would treat the different unions differently, the different public employees differently with regard to these kinds of provisions.
Well, first of all, Representative Liebling, I'm sorry I didn't recognize you, but I wanted to get the meeting over with, and there were a few people who had raised their hands for a long time, and it's my power as the chair to eventually at some point say we've got to move on. So that's why I didn't recognize you. In regard to your other question, though, you know, we have passed these bills. We've passed different bills not containing every contract in the past. For example, last year, I was the person who carried pretty much all the Minsky contracts and actually one of the law enforcement contracts that Representative Cornish has this time, which dealt with the state troopers, the BCA agents, and the game wardens. And I think what had happened last year is there were a number of contracts that had gone through mediation that hadn't been ratified, and so I willingly stepped forward and took on that role to get those contracts ratified. So we had not all contracts being ratified at the same time last year. As someone who handled all the Minsky contracts last year, I guess I felt it made sense for me to handle them again this year. Representative Cornish, with his law enforcement background, felt like he wanted to handle those law enforcement contracts this year, and so I told him that if he wanted them, he could. But that's why I'm carrying these contracts, is I guess basically I carried them last year. I'm familiar with those contracts. I'm less familiar with the others. Representative Cornish is, because of his background in law enforcement, familiar with the law enforcement contracts. And then Representative Drazkowski, I guess I don't know the whole history of Representative Drazkowski carrying the other contracts, but obviously someone had to carry them, and apparently he stepped forward to carry them. Other discussion? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So going along Representative Liebling's line, Mr. Chair, I support all of the labor contracts as we pass them out of the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. And so, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to get a sense from you as to you previously have carried all the contracts. Why is it that you felt that the labor unions contracts that are in Representative Drazkowski's bills didn't warrant the same protections of the negotiated agreement as these do? Mr. Chair, I have not seen labor contracts become so political when you have a clean bill in Representative Lilly's bill that you could have passed, or, Mr. Chair, you could have chosen to carry them all. You have in the past. You talked about how you've done it. My question for you is, what's wrong with the current negotiated labor contracts that you felt like you needed to have Representative Drazkowski's extra language in those bills as you heard them today? And why didn't you put them in the clean bill that you have for this particular contract?
Representative Hillstrom, it is not true that I have carried all the labor contracts in the past. I have never carried a bill, to the best of my knowledge, certainly in the last year that I've been here, that ratified all the contracts. What I carried last year were the four Minsky contracts and, I believe, the law enforcement contract. There may have been another small one, I forget, but there were only six contracts that I carried last year. And quite frankly, I mean, I have a couple of Minsky institutions in my area. I'm familiar with those contracts. I'm really not familiar with the other contracts. And so I chose this year to, again, carry the ones that I was familiar with. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just think it's really sad that you didn't become familiar with your constituents' contracts, because you also have MAPE members and AFSCME members that you also represent, Mr. Chair. It's too bad you didn't review their contracts.
Well, I do have other people that I represent, and they do a good job, too. Representative Cornish is carrying the contract that represents some of them. And, again, I don't know the whole history of Representative Draskowski and the other contracts, but I was carrying those contracts that I have carried in the past. Did I see someone else's hand up?
You saw mine, but I'm going to pass.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Before you adjourn, though, I want to be recognized.
Sure. All right. Okay, well, members, seeing no other discussion, all in favor of House File 3255 being referred to the General Register, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion prevails. House File 3255 is referred to the General Register. I'll recognize Representative Carlson in a moment. Members, we are planning on having the Supplemental Conference Committee meet tonight at 8 o'clock in Room 10. Representative Carlson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion after the discussions we've had today that we pass the Lilly Bill to the General Register. And I think that's shall my motion be Senate File 2626. That's the one that's in our packet. So, Mr. Chairman, I make that motion that we pass Senate File 2626 to the General Register.
And the roll call.
And roll call. Tongue tied. A roll call is requested.
Okay, roll call. Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to table the motion.
I'd like a roll call. Draskowski moves to table the motion. Representative Draskowski moves to table the motion of Representative Carlson's. Representative Carlson requests a roll call on the motion to table. All in, let's see, the clerk will take the roll on the motion to table.
Not Block.
Yes.
Albright.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Carlson.
No.
Cornish.
Aye.
David.
Yes.
Dean.
Yes.
Detmer.
Yes.
Draskowski.
Yes.
Garofalo.
Yes.
Gunther.
Yes.
Hackbarth. Hamilton. Hillstrom.
No.
Hornstein.
No.
Kahn.
No.
Liebling.
No.
Loon.
Yes.
Mahoney.
No.
McNamara.
Yes.
Murphy.
No.
Nornis.
Yes.
Pulowski.
No.
Poppy.
No.
Torkelson.
Yes.
Erdahl?
Yeah.
Wagenius?
No.
With there being 15 ayes and 10 nays, the motion is tabled. Members, I'll alert you to any other meetings we may be having. With that, the meeting is adjourned.